The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires.
Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. It's Matt Ireland here, and today I'm joined by my good friend Ben Sheldrake. How you doing, Ben? All right?
I'm all right, Matt. Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Jolly good. Now, before we actually make a start on this one, I have a couple of apologies from the previous podcast with myself and Dougie, as has been pointed out. The first one by a good friend of both of ours, Dominic Newby. I mentioned that there was a Mercedes Axor in a lake in Germany, and he has quite correctly pointed out, no, it's actually a 1998 Atego. Quite impressed he knows the year of it, such as Dom's expertise on all things Mercedes, I guess. He's
He is an oracle of
Mercedes. There's no two ways about it. So I stand corrected, Dom. I do apologise. And the other was also with regards to the Midland CB mic and app. Another good friend of mine, Jim Barker, he's told me that the microphones can actually be linked up to certain Bluetooth-friendly actual CB units. So there was something else as well, but I'll be honest, Jim, I've forgotten what the other thing you told me was. So I'll perhaps have to put another apology in the next podcast. So, as you can see...
Jim Barker, there you go. That's a podcast.
There you go. Yeah, could do. Yeah, don't give him ideas. Oh, dear. So, anyway, that is that, I believe. So, Ben, how on earth did you end up in this wonderful industry of haulage?
A long story short, really. Sort of lots of connections from day one.
Yeah.
My dad was in transport in the early 70s before I was born at ACH, Aston Clinton Haulage.
Yeah.
And then we moved back to Essex, where my parents are from, and he ended up into parcels with parcel franchises.
Yeah.
So we had ANC parcels. He was one of the original franchisees for ANC when it started.
Oh, right, okay.
Did that for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, whatever.
Yeah.
That moved on and ended up over at Business Post doing Business Post.
Yeah.
For another 10 or 15 years before he retired.
Another ray from the grave. A great livery, weren't they, Business Post?
Yellow and black.
Yeah, yellow and black.
Everyone remembers that.
Yeah.
Before they got sort of swallowed up and turned into white livery.
Like most things these days. Yeah. So was he a driver for ACH?
No, he was warehouse stroke yardman, so he was always loading stuff. And
right.
He'd started out actually at New Holland, I think, if I get this around the right way.
Yeah.
I think he started at New Holland and then came across to ACH.
Right, okay,
fair enough.
Which
was a bit unusual, but he'd sort of been in agricultural stuff and sort of friends around the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Did he ever actually have a licence or...?
Yeah, but again, not till later on. I remember him doing his HGV sort of probably around his 40th, I guess.
Oh, okay.
But he did it purely so he could spend all day in the warehouse and running the business, and then overnight he could take the night trunk to Stoke and Trent and back and come back in the morning. He did that quite regularly. And
yeah. Long days and nights.
And that's what sort of happens when you're a kid, and unlike some of these others who go off to Europe and stuff, I used to
do a night trunk to Stoke on Trent.
On Wednesday and then go to school the next day.
Well, why not?
Soon learn about 48-hour days, which is where we all ended up. But yeah, no, so really, unlike lots of others, I've always been on the skirts of transport and stuff and did various bits from Dad, and although he had vans everywhere, I wanted to be into trucks and sort of.
So presumably all through school you knew that you were going to be driving a truck and
I did,
nothing
else. I was the only boy at school who liked trucks until probably the last 6 months of being at school. I found somebody else with their science book was covered in truck and driver posters.
Oh, fantastic. Are you still friends with him?
No. I don't know. He turned into a mechanic in Braintree, I think. But,
okay.
I don't know.
Maybe he saw the light, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
So, do you leave school straight away, or you bother with college?
Did bother with college, I wasn't. I was good at school. I ended up being head boy at school for some reason.
Because you're clever.
Because apparently so, people like me, I think. I don't think it was anything to do with being clever. And then I went to college, but I didn't want to do A-levels because I don't like exams and stuff like that. So I did a GNVQ at the time.
Yes.
In business studies.
Yeah.
And that actually leads me on to getting into what I did. So part of the business course was to do a business plan,
yeah,
which was sent off to a local bank to see if they'd approve your plan as part of your course.
Yeah.
And Barclays came back and said, yeah, we'll give you the money to buy a 7.5 ton.
No. Perfect.
I was like, all right. Well, here you go. They can have some money. Like, yeah, fine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then that sort of led into buying a 7.5 tonner to start driving about.
So you're an owner driver from day one?
From 18, yeah.
You never actually...
Yeah, and I looked it up this morning before you came around. It was the 3rd of November, 97 was my first day.
Right.
As a owner driver. Right. It was the 3rd of November, definitely November 97.
Yeah.
And at that point I started... I'd done my work experience at school at DFDS, or Chelmer Cargo in Coggeshall, Essex. Yeah. Lots of dad had loads of connections, obviously being in parcels, you knew all the transport companies, all the businesses in the area, and
yep.
That was all great. And they always said, oh, just come here. So I went there for 2 weeks work experience, whatever we used to do.
Yeah,
that led to the connections of then when you get your own lorry, come over. So I was like, there we go.
And
so
they actually honoured it.
Actually honoured it. And
excellent.
That started pretty quickly. And
did you have to do a C1 licence, or did you get yours?
No, I was grandfather.
Your
yeah,
grandfather. Because how old are you? Because you're...
Touch older than you.
A touch older than me, but not a great deal.
Check your notes. It was 97 I put my truck. I think I passed my test in early 97.
Yeah.
I think. And I think it was either the 97 or 98 that
it
changed.
I think it was 98, because I think I left school in... Because I would have been 16, so I left school in 97. So, yeah, 98 or 99, I would have been 18, whichever one.
Yeah, so you're better.
And I just missed out, so I had to do mechanics.
I know, it's the same year I passed my driving test, was the year it changed, or within that year it changed.
Yeah. So you got in.
Yeah, so I got in. So again, it was great on car license, 7.5 tonner.
Yeah, so what 7.5 tonner did you buy first?
A little DAF 45, which sort of full circle story, being in truck sales now, is that I bought a DAF because DAF were the only people. Dean Crane at Harris Commercials, down at Thurrock, he was the only salesman who'd sell me a lorry at the age of 18.
No one else was interested. They thought it was just a bit of a joke.
Yeah. Which was bloody great, to be fair. It was a really good little lorry for 2 years.
What would you have had given the choice? If you could have had your first choice, 7.5 tonner.
Be what I've got now, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah, the little LN cab Mercedes.
But obviously Merck weren't interested.
Merck weren't interested, and also they were, even back then, as a 7.5 tonner, it was an expensive truck. I remember going to have a look at, while I was in Thurrock, probably seeing Dean for the first time, I went round to Mercedes-Benz in Thurrock, and they had a used one there, and that was... bloody expensive compared to what the DAF was new. And
so your DAF was brand new, that little 45, that had a high roof, didn't it?
No, it didn't. It just had a normal sleeper. And I think now, looking back, I reckon it was a day cab that they converted to a hatch sleeper.
Yeah.
And a really annoying little connection between. But
yeah.
I didn't do many nights out to start with, but DFDS really was all sort of day work. And, but that was a hell of a job.
Was it sort of hot shot or...?
It was all like local distributors. So out of Coggeshall, they used to distribute everything sort of... I'd say the southeast of England, but really sort of Coventry, Oxford, down at Southampton kind of thing, that area, and it was daily distribution. So into Coventry in the morning, load up, go out, tip.
Multi-drop
and collections.
A few collections on the way back.
Yeah. But it soon became very apparent that I was quite good at it, I think.
Yes.
I ended up, within a matter of months of being there, I was off doing Berkshires and Hampshires and 10 or 15 drops a day, or 10, 15 jobs a day. And others were struggling to get around Essex and Hertfordshire, and I was in and out and back. And
keen as mustard.
Yeah, keen as mustard, which was, do you know that was the title of my commercial motor piece?
Oh, really? No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was keen as mustard. Yeah.
No, fair enough.
But yeah, so that's really, 7.5 tonners was great. And it was, you know.
So you had that DAF for how long, a couple of years?
2 years.
2 years, yeah.
2 years, and then I can't quite remember what happened with it, but it massively started falling apart.
Right.
Overworked. Did one or two trips to Holland or Belgium, Venlo, I think. Can't remember. Which is really when that's when the appetite started for doing European stuff.
But yeah.
We'll touch on that probably later.
Yeah.
Then I bought a little MAN, which was 2000 on a V-Ridge.
Oh, I forgot about the MAN.
That
had a high roof, didn't it?
That had a hatch of Sky cab.
That's right, Huge cab.
That truck, out of everything seven trucks I've owned, I reckon that as a 7.5 tonner was possibly... Even over my airbrushed Atego, I reckon that man was probably my best.
Yeah.
My favourite, anyway.
Yeah. Was that second hand, brand new?
Brand new, yeah.
Westside Commercials in Colchester?
Yeah,
I remember them well, yeah.
Sold to me by Mark Richmond, who's still there.
Yeah.
And my colleague at Mercedes Trucks, when I was there, Rob Dale also.
Yeah.
Just signed out in sales and did all the background work, so everyone's always intermingled as we always find, but that truck was bloody great. That was just a bullet. It was just, I think, flat out, that would do 86, I think.
Apparently.
Apparently. 70 miles an hour is the legal limit for a seven hour tunnel.
I dare say MTAC is long gone. Yeah. Plus, we could also use the outside lane as well, couldn't we? Outside until lane, it changed, yeah.
I had a job out of. So it moved on from DFDS doing the daily distribution. Coggeshall DFDS then moved to Purfleet about a year after I started or so.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to pay the mileage to run down to Purfleet from Braintree.
Yeah.
So the big decision was what do I do? And my dad was like, well, go and see these couple of customers because they do a lot of bigger stuff as well as the parcels. And
yeah.
So I started moving a few bits around for various people around Braintree, Witham, Chelmsford.
Yeah.
And sort of the local area. And that really sort of where everything took off, becoming my own. It's a proper owner driver, really, just with all my own customers. And that worked really well. But one of the customers in Braintree was a company called Serrano Leisure, who do the UK's biggest sunbed importer.
Oh, right.
Which led to some great, interesting jobs and fitting sunbeds here and there. And But we used to go to one of their people up in Larkhall.
Yeah.
And they used to go up there three times a week.
Right.
It's not bad
going.
It wasn't bad going.
Yeah.
And reloading in Newcastle on Tyne on the way back.
Yeah.
On the third trip. And that was only down to being de-restricted.
Yeah.
No speed limiter.
Yeah.
It's just flat out.
Everywhere. Yeah. Flat as I think pretty much every 7.5-ton driver was back in the day. Yeah. Just flat out. Yeah. Because I was on my 7.5-tonner. Yeah.
I think it would have been
99, 90, whenever it was. And just great days from a little tilt. Like a rocket.
Yeah. I look back and I think people who still know me now, otherwise you know, is I still love the little cabs.
Yes.
The big sleeper cabs and stuff.
So MAM for another 2 years?
Yeah, another 2 years-ish about that. And at that point, things were really busy. So I ended up actually taking the driver on. He drove the MA in and I ordered a new Tego.
Yeah.
I always ordered new trucks and I know it was, you could save some money by buying used.
Yeah.
But I always liked the idea of it being new. So you knew where it come from.
Yeah.
You had some warranty with it.
Yeah.
You get some R&M with it. But I just like the idea of new bit, and sort
bit,
of sacrifice.
A bit more peace of mind, really.
Yeah, and just sacrifice that little bit of extra money you would have made by having to use through the peace of mind.
Which,
to be fair, probably was a good thing about it. Yeah. I had the Atego, and the Atego was a big step up.
Yeah.
That was on the road in about 2002-ish. It was 52 plate.
Yeah.
And that was a Mercedes Atego, big roof cab. Truck and Driver magazine, I was in there. You can look it up in your history files. Yeah. Didn't quite make centre page or front cover, but
that was full really airbrush job on the cow, wasn't it?
Yeah, and these days I don't like airbrushing anymore.
Do you not?
Back then,
no.
It was like spot on.
It was, yeah.
And it was really good. But it was quite interesting. I think it cost me like $2,500 to have it done.
Right. But who did it? You remember? Was it round this way or was it?
Blake round here called Simon.
Yeah.
And he also did, there was a fleet in Felix though, MJ Graves.
Martin Graves, yeah.
Same bloke who did him.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Troy's Simon, he was a bloke from Colchester.
Yeah.
It was just different. And at that time, it was really fashionable to do. And
yeah.
I thought, I'll do it, get it done, have it, whatever. But within the first month of having that truck on the road, I was at a customer's loading up or whatever, and one of his customers came over and said, oh, like your lorry, it's nice and smart with all the artwork and stuff. And then the work I got out of him ended up being like $5,000's worth of work. And
so the airbrush and pay for itself.
Really.
That's it. It's just that they are a big advertising tool, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, yeah.
And I always remember dear old Bob Carter always used to say to me, he can never understand all these companies running around with a trailer without any sort of sign writing on. So you've got like a 45-foot advertising board.
I can never remember where it is, but I've mentioned it to various people over the time. It might have been one of the magazines when I was younger, and they sort of gave you a rough estimate of how many people see the back doors of a trailer in the UK every day. It's like getting on for 100,000 people or something, potentially.
Yeah.
And you think, just put your name and number on the back and who knows?
I'm sure, it paid dividends for you.
Yeah.
So it must have been. But I remember, it's funny because our paths never quite crossed, even though I was working up the road.
Your lorry.
You remember my truck, I remember yours.
Yeah.
And yet we never actually met and spoke, which is nowadays it just seems so surreal how our paths never crossed, but that was life. But then so what happened? Did you keep the driver on who's on
the
MAM?
Kept the driver on, and I think in the end this is where sort of a bit of being young and inexperienced came in, and sort of the demise of the 7.5-tonners really is I took the driver on for the year, and we were mega busy. Probably could have worked another couple of trucks and subbed quite a bit of work out and stuff, but busy working for two main customers at the time. And all of a sudden you realise you haven't been paid for a few weeks.
And
the biggest customer who ended up owing me money was just, they were one of those customers. You could walk in today and say, can I have a cheque for last week's work? And they give you a cheque there, and then no problem.
Yeah.
Whenever I needed money, I could ask them for it.
Yeah.
Or it would come every 4 weeks if I didn't.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was 8 weeks later, and I was like, oh, I haven't been paid. I've been so busy working.
You haven't noticed.
And then all of a sudden, they sort of disappeared down the pan, owing me, I don't know, 40 grand, I guess. That's a lot of money.
That's a big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big hit nowadays, let alone nearly 20 years ago.
Two drivers, so that almost straight away was like, right, I either pack up completely, had to think about what to do, and that's where I ended up moving. I got offered some work, traction work, putting Continental cargo trailers out the dock.
Yeah, so had you done your C&E at the time, or did you so you got offered the work, you just needed a license and a truck.
Yeah, so
not much to ask for somebody who's now owed 40 grand by somebody who's not going to get it back.
So managed to get through that. I had enough money to cover the debt, if you like. So sort of put myself back to zero, plus a bit more, put the deposit down on a tractor unit.
Did you trade in the...
I sold the Atego.
It's still about, isn't it? The Atego's still... has been seen.
Yeah, within the last... Definitely in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
It's now... I'd love to... If anyone knows where it is, and you can find pictures of the Atego wherever you like.
Is it done... Is it pigeon racing or something like that?
Yeah, it's pigeon racing. It's the last real... thing was a friend of mine down in Somerset saw it coming joining the M5.
Yeah.
The curtain's been removed and it was all like those pigeon boxes.
Pigeon fancy machine,
But it had a trailer on as well.
Right, okay.
But I've tried to search various pigeon things, and pigeon people clearly aren't very internet friendly because there's not a lot of info about.
Well, they use pigeons for post, don't they? So they're not going to use an email.
No, they're busy sending messages between themselves.
Yeah.
I'd love to know where it is. If anyone knows where it is, I imagine it's probably up north somewhere.
Yeah.
I know it was based either Warrington, I can't say if it was Warrington or the other side of the country, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But that'd be great to see if we can find that.
Yeah, really, you never know. So yeah, if you can help, it's a lightish blue, isn't it?
Yeah, light blue. It still had BJS painted in the airbrushing, and hasn't really changed from by all accounts. But
yeah, we'll perhaps try and get some pictures put on social media for try and jog people's memories. See if we can.
Perhaps you can dig out the truck and driver archive.
Could do, perhaps. Yeah, if we get time.
As long as you take my face out of it, that'd be
great. So you ended up with a big shiny tractor unit.
So I ordered the tractor unit before I'd done my licence, ended up passing my licence the week after the truck had arrived at the dealer over here.
Because unusually it was a 4x2, wasn't it?
4x2, yeah.
Rather than 6x2.
On the premise that I'd always wanted to do continental work, and even to this day I've never done anywhere near you or anybody. I've only ever done Benelux.
Yeah.
That's about it. A few runs to Paris now and again and stuff. But always wanted to do more, which, again, just harping back actually to when me and you used to pass each other.
Yeah.
When I had my sky-cabbed man.
Yeah.
I used to pass my good friend now, Steve Marsh, with his one. And because we had the same cab and same truck, we used to flash each other, but never stopped.
Met.
And I always blame him for my career ending in hotshot European work because it was... We never quite got to that point, but...
Yeah, the right truck.
Yeah,
the
right
customers.
Truck, yeah. So the tractor unit went on the road, ended up pulling... Continental cargo carriers trailers.
Yeah.
And I bought 4x2 because I wanted to do the European bits they did. They had a couple of contracts which used to take them either back to Ostend or whatever else, and some direct stuff. So ended up doing that and did that quite regularly for a while. I think I did that for 3 years in the end before a similar thing happened. Been working for a chap through a chap who I had to work for, and a lot less time actually with tractor unit, obviously more money involved and stuff, and it was a matter of weeks. And I then found out through Continental Cargo Carriers that this chap had gone pop, which is why he hadn't paid me the week before. And in those following 2 or 3 weeks was just enough. And I was like, I'm not bailing myself out again.
Yeah.
Well, I come out of 10 years of being an overdriver with at least 20 quid in my pocket.
Yeah.
So I had to call it a halt there and then, but those were good days. And that was those 3 years now, I should think, were probably the best 3 years ever. It was just great.
Yeah.
Just flying backwards and forwards, Belgium, Holland.
Was it Dover Calais train or both?
Always on the train.
Always on the train.
I've never, until later life, never been across the water on anything other than the train. Even when I did the few runs for DFDS right at the start, that was the real early days of the Channel Tunnel.
Yeah, when it was a lot more efficient than what it is now.
Yeah, it's good fun. But I always wanted to do more, but never quite got round to it.
These things happen, unfortunately. You know, that's the way the world goes, isn't it? So
the sad fact now is I've been off the road longer than I was on it, and I don't know how to turn it around.
So the Triple C work ended, because they ended up going pop as well, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they ended
Triple C and Nipras were sort of...
Nipras and then Triple C. in Triple C recently, not the last few years, got bought out by Europa.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, but that was real good work. And
yeah.
Luckily enough, that was a time where I was still able to get my hands on some old-fashioned tilts,
yeah,
and learn how crap they were as they got older.
Yeah, it's quite funny seeing all, you know, people commenting and, oh, how I love a tilt and I love a step frame, and I just think, yeah, but you wouldn't want to go and strip one out now because you've really got rose-tinted glass, yeah, on. They were a pain in the backside, weren't they? There's no two ways about it. They're a massive pain.
Any sort of dent, dink, knock with machinery or anything, bent something, and then it became a problem. And
trying to put them back together, especially if it's windy. Yeah,
windy, you know, on like your own.
Half lacing them just trying to drive down the road to get the sheet to settle and
moving around, shoving it around the yard in circles. It was great fun, and I'm glad it was, you know.
Yeah.
It was sort of one on the bucket list it was able
but
to
as Euroliners started coming in, just like, ah, that's better.
Yeah, it's far
apart from the blooming ceiling cords through every buckle, so I'll take all that.
Although then the problem with ferry trailers, as everyone will know, is that they also get wrecked,
so, yes,
you know, in sliding roofs without the pull cord at the back, so you have to use the tilt boards to get them up. And
yeah, they get pretty hammered, don't they, ferry trailers? They don't need a pampered life, do they?
No, definitely
it's
not.
It's fair to say.
No.
Yeah, broken boards and, yeah, counting the boards and the
straps in, the straps out. That never tallied up. That never worked. But
no.
That was good work. It was, you know, again, Triple C, it was 3 great years. I met some really good people who still sort of contact with on friends and on Facebook. And
yeah.
Battles and Pours to Ostend. Some weeks we'd do 3 or 4 trips a week out to Ostend, even if it was trailer changes on a Saturday morning. And again, back to the 4x2 bit, you had cheap fuel.
Yeah, cheap fuel.
Big fuel tanks.
Yeah.
It was 1,300 litres, I think I had.
Yeah.
It was all that sort of time. That
was a Megaspace, wasn't it?
Megaspace, it was 1846, but don't tell anyone. I had it chipped about 6 months, a year into having it. I had it chipped up to a 500 and something, but I wasn't particularly fussed about the power. But everyone said that chipping trucks in the early 2000s, and it did. And I could show you the diaries because they're still up there, but almost from week one, that was a mile to the gallon better.
Yeah.
On fuel, which actually really did 8 to the gallon.
And it's funny because I'm sure you know Tim Freeman, he's a good friend of mine.
Yes.
Still got his version 1 FH on the road. It went on the road in 2000, I think. I can't imagine Tim listens to the podcast, but hopefully he does. But he had his truck chipped after, I think it might have been within the first couple of years. It's badge as a 420, but it's a bit over 500.
Yeah.
Instantly, the fuel economy just went up, and he's still running the truck. It's never done it any harm. Yeah. It's just done it the world of good.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Whether you need to do it now or not, I don't know. But back then, it made such a difference to the fuel. It was worth, I don't remember how much it cost to do it, but
they actually did it
1 year at Truckfest Peterborough.
Yeah.
Remember, the bloke came over off of the stand, took whatever the box, you know, the ECU or whatever, the box off the back of the underneath the truck.
Yeah.
On the grass at the Peterborough thing, did it on his laptop and stuck it back on. And
away you go, mate.
Away you go. Show special. That's great. Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So did you go driving for someone else when it all packed up?
So after that, then it was a real turning point, because as a kid, you know, all you want to do is drive trucks. And did it, enjoyed it, and then had really the decision taken away from me as to, you know, I had no choice but to give up.
Yeah.
So then at that point I ended up going, I drove an 8-wheel tipper for a year.
Yeah.
My dad at that point had semi-retired to a company in Braintree called GB Finch, lovely family company, run 8-wheelers. He was there semi-retired doing a bit, and he grew up with the Finch family as a kid, and they'd all said, oh, just come work for us until you find whatever you want to do next, just come drive a tipper. And that was bloody great.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Flying about?
Oh, man. They're all Ivecos. If anyone knows Finch, you won't move from Iveco. But it was great. It was just a different experience.
Yeah.
Stories of drifting fully loaded 8-wheel tippers around quarries and up like country lanes where you can't see anything out the mirrors. And it was a real good time, to be fair.
Yeah.
But again, my reputation sort of came back that all the old boys on there got a bit pissed, got a bit annoyed.
Sorry. Yes.
Got a bit annoyed that I had... I never used to drive silly, but I was told to have a half-hour break in the morning, half-hour break in the afternoon, and then just drive backwards and forwards in between.
Fair enough.
That's what you do. But then you show up, all the old boys are having a cup of tea every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
I think even now Lee Finch used to say that I still hold most of the records for getting the most amount of loads done in a day, which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. But yeah, it was brilliant fun. So did that for a year, and then through Nick Garlick at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually know how I ended up meeting Nick, but... he said that there was a job going in the office at H.C. Wilson. So,
was it something you thought about doing, going into an office, or did you want to drive?
No, not at all. No, it's really just sort of still like the idea of driving, but they were looking for somebody in the office to sort of do operations and stuff. And
yeah.
I know they go to some far-flung destinations with some decent loans, and actually thought that wouldn't be too bad for a while, perhaps even thinking, maybe even thinking at the time that I'll see what happens and see how it pans out. But
yeah,
it was at that point that, you know, sort of, it worked out really well. I was there for 4 or 5 years in the end. And
yeah.
Had a great time, really good people.
Yeah, interesting. Like I say, interesting work to some interesting places.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, very professional company.
Yeah. Learned a lot of things in there, and, you know, even things I use to this day. And I think they're just, it was a real eye-opener to actually work with a proper haulage company doing proper work.
Mm-hmm.
So far away from what I'd sort of managed to get myself through for 10 years.
Yeah.
Again, we would all have our time again. I'd so do things differently to what you do. But at that point, it was all new, and I was young and keen, and keen as mustard. Just want to get on and drive. And,
yeah.
It was good, though. It was good.
Yeah. So you're at Wilson's for 4 or 5 years?
4 or 5 years at Wilson's. And then various reasons, really. Wanted to change and got offered a job at Kersey Freight as operations manager.
Yeah.
And that was before Kersey Freight became what they are today.
The big, quite a big player now, aren't they?
They were just on the verge of, from freight forwarder, they had two trucks on the road.
Yeah.
And doing a lot of container devanning and loading a lot of subbies all across. And that's really where I got involved with it, and did that for, worked there for a good couple of years, which then got me back to a little bit of driving.
Yeah.
Doing a sort of holiday cover out to Paris and back, which was good. Mm-hmm. Nice to get
the garments.
Yeah, garments and sort of all the box Chinese stuff and Italian shoes and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Good fun. Good times, and actually good people to work for. Still friends with Mr. Crawford today, and we had a chat last week actually about various bits and bobs. But
Are they still doing European work? Do you know?
Yeah, I think they've still definitely got traders that go to Europe.
Yeah,
But again,
still subbed out.
Yeah, at that point I sort of had enough after a couple of years, and was offered a job in truck sales, which sort of took precedence. And
which again was a bit of a step away. And if somebody had told you at school that you'd be selling trucks rather than driving, you'd be like, no, I'm not.
No, because I think, again, it sort of came about through another connection of my dad. My dad, I think they shared a mutual accountant.
Right.
My dad knew David Grant, who ran Orwell Trucks, Mercedes-Benz at the time, and Dad had been buying vans through them, and that's where I bought my Tigo and the tractor unit. And
so you knew the people already, didn't you?
Yeah. And David Grant always said, if there's anything I can do to help, then just ask. And so I actually contacted him saying that I'm looking for maybe another job in transport or haulage, or looking for another haulage position, I guess. And he said, well, if I know anything, I'll let you know. He said, but we are looking for a salesman. And my reply was, I don't know anybody, but if I know anybody, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
He went, well, no. He goes, you like talking to people. And I was like, yeah, I love meeting people. He goes, you also like talking about trucks, from what I'm told. And I was like,
it's a bit of a rumour.
It's a bit of a rumour.
I've never heard you talk about trucks.
And he said, that's all you need to do to sell trucks. He said, you don't need to be a salesman. You just need to have good relationships and know what you're talking about.
Right.
Know what you're talking about, maybe a step too far. But,
and to be fair, you were a fan of the product.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There's no two ways about it.
Always loved Merc trucks. And that was more so sort of later in life, once I got my Atigo.
Yeah.
That's really where I got into Mercs. But that sort of led on, and long conversations with the partner at that point. She was like, well, I don't want you to be a smarmy salesman. And then I thought about it, and thought about the likes of Rob Dale and David Scarfe and James Crouch and all the sort of local salesmen. And actually none of them were smarmy used car salesmen. They're all good old boys. And I actually thought I could probably, I'd give it a go. So,
what's the worst that could happen?
Exactly,
really?
Yeah. And that lended to a...
So how did you find it to start with then? Completely and utterly. Well, they just send you out to regular customers they've got, or do they just say?
So you sort of take on a patch, and these are your regular customers, and you go. It's just like walking into any room where you don't know somebody. You sort of go, right, I'm going to come down and say hello, and you go meet people, and you get chatting, and you actually spend the key to a lot of truck sales is not talking about selling trucks.
Yeah.
It's talking about work, talking about everything else, talking about all the other stuff.
And
it is still, even despite whatever manufacturer you're with, I think it's still a profession where actually the relationship is king. More found that more so now I've moved to Scania. Truck East Scania is just a really great company to work for. But it's back to old school selling. It's about relationships, it's about seeing customers, it's about having a cup of tea, it's about having a sandwich, or and actually the sales come off the back of it, and that's real. It's so enjoyable. So you end up sitting down like we're doing now, and you sit down with people and
just talk about trucks. Yeah. Interestingly, speaking to you and our good friend Mark Farrow, when you spec a truck, what surprised me was kind of like the more you spec on it, the kind of less it will cost you. Me and Luke talked about that briefly as well recently, which seems a bit sort of backwards, doesn't it?
It is a bit backwards. I think it, obviously, you know, I work for two manufacturers. I think it depends slightly on how their approach is.
But yeah.
A lot of people, both manufacturers I've worked for, try to put packages together.
Yeah.
More like your sort of family car, you can have your dog package, your metallic paint pack, whatever. You can have your packages, and actually, when they put those packages in, you can actually end up saving money, because if you put it in as a package, then they group everything together, which gives them a bigger discount off of it.
And yeah.
Actually saves a little bit of money here and there. But
yeah, rather than just personally going through every single tick and deciding whether you do or don't want
it. Day one at truck building school is you build the spec you want and put in all the options you want, and then you go to the package page and see which packages are going to save you some money. And
yeah.
Some cases it will save you £50, but you might get two extra lines of spec. But on the other hand, it can also save you £300. And
because, I mean, as just a driver, you quite often look at trucks going down the road and think, who on earth spec that? Just some of the things.
That's the funny thing. When you're meeting customers now, the funny thing is the difference between every operator.
Yeah.
Every operator in Felixstowe, just use Felixstowe, they're all container operators.
Yeah.
Every operator in Felixstowe will think their choice of tyre is the best tyre for trailers.
Yeah.
But they'll all be different.
Yeah.
Whereas every truck they have and every fleet they have, they're all different manufacturers of trucks. They think that's the best one for the job.
Yeah.
No, my spec's better than their spec. And
yeah.
You can't push anybody into. All we do is try, as just selling trucks, is try to advise people what you know is would be the best for them.
Yeah.
You mentioned about walking in yards and seeing yards of trucks and stuff. And the biggest thing I used to get was I could tell what people needed rather than wanted, what they needed.
Yeah.
Just by walking around a transport yard, and you get an idea. And perhaps that comes from my background of having driven, lived, slept, eaten in trucks. But it's a lot of salesmen these days are only fresh out of university or school or.
Salesmen, they're not come from the road as such, so they don't know what it's like.
No. That definitely helps because it gives you an idea and an understanding of what's important and what people need. But it's also important to realise when you're selling trucks is that actually you can only advise.
Yeah,
if people still want to buy,
that's what they're gonna
buy.
I've bought that for the last 10 years, but absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you did this, you could do that. No. That's my spec. That's that. Yeah. Then you just I mean, like some of the ride heights and things like that you see. You think if you just thought about it a bit more, you could
you get such a mix of operators. So the operators who want everything new, everything modern, all the technology. Fuel saving, safety. But there are still a lot of operators, whether it's just East Anglia or not, I don't know, but there's still a lot of operators who aren't interested in any of that.
Yeah.
They just want a truck to do the job. They're a tool at the end of the day, we all know that. But there's also one or two people who still don't monitor fuel.
And
perhaps more so people where haulage isn't the main game.
Yeah.
There might be manufacturers or something, but surely everybody these days would be keeping an eye on your fuel.
I mean, you'd think so, but
it's the one thing you can say.
I mean, I know one company that definitely don't care about fuel, which is bizarre as it seems. Mm. Just not interested. Just don't care. Mm. But and again, I've spoken about this before. Just the amount of people that don't seem to monitor AdBlue, it just staggers me.
No one does. No.
I know. So I think one or two people who monitor AdBlue, and it's just you know people seem so focused on diesel consumption. But not AdBlue, and it surprises me still. Cause it, I mean, especially the price of it now. It's not. Whereas when it first came out, it was like 10p or whatever it was. It's a lot more now, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And the consumption of it seems to be a lot higher. I guess it's just down to the Euro emissions having to meet
that. Yeah, Euro emissions, and I think as time's gone on, it's become harder and harder for manufacturers to meet the ridiculously
over-regulated
emissions rules.
Yes.
But we had to do it somehow, and everyone's the same, and depending on your engine setup, depends on how much you're going to use, I guess.
So, just going back a touch, obviously Mercedes have now launched an electric truck, which I think there's at least one that's made its way to these shores.
Yeah.
Scania, I see, took an electric truck to the retro show, ironically. Is it an option that people can buy now? Is it the electric scanner? Or is it still?
The scanner's still a way off, I believe.
Still in development.
Yeah, still in development, yeah. As in mainstream production.
Yeah.
That'll either come out later this year or beginning of next year.
Yeah.
But the Mercedes, that was probably the last thing I did a month or two before I left. We went to Germany to drive the E600.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, Matt, but let's not talk about the infrastructure on electric vehicles, because we all know that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But if it was just a straight choice, I'd pick an electric truck out of a diesel.
Really?
Incredible. Just incredible. You've got instant full power if you need it.
Yeah.
And when we're driving those things around Germany and pulling away uphill from a T-junction, fully loaded at 40 tonnes.
Yeah.
And you're at 56 within minutes. It's incredible. And so smooth that you can drive it like a full family car. It's just so gentle because the gearbox is different. And it's just, a real different experience. Weirdly quiet, but amazing.
Yeah. So, I did try, as I'm sure I've said before, when Volvo launched the FH4, again with Mark Farrow, when I was in Amsterdam at the time and they were launching it there. And so they had a drive day. I went with him and I tried a Volvo FE, I think it was. Mm-hmm. But it was a diesel electric hybrid. So you would start on electric up to about 30 mile an hour, I think it was, 50k, then the diesel would kick in.
Right.
But it's just it is really weird driving a completely silent truck.
Yeah, it is.
It's
weird.
The road safety thing is a bit concerned, I suppose, especially like somewhere like London where that's aimed.
Yeah.
But I suppose they must have electric buses and people. Yeah, you'd like to think are getting more adapted to
electric vehicles. I think everyone's getting to that point where we're all sort of beginning to realise that the tyres you can hear behind you aren't necessarily just a push bike. And it sort of changes. But I know that obviously you can have, some of them have speakers on, so they've got a bit more noise on them and whatever else.
I think
that's the way forward. And
I suppose just convincing operators are going to be the biggest.
It is at the moment because it's. I don't know if it's changed recently, but the UK government have been so backwards in terms of...
Fancy that, in everything.
In everything. Sorry, let's just stop it there.
Absolutely everything.
In everything, in terms of, there was, I won't name which country it was, but there was a European country where you could take your diesel truck quote with your electric truck quote to the local government office, and they would give you 80% of the difference between the two.
Crikey.
And you think, actually, that's a real incentive, because then all of a sudden you're paying a few grand, 10 grand, 15, 20 grand more for an electric than you are your diesel.
Because at the moment, there is quite a vast difference, isn't there,
cost. I think most manufacturers, it's depending on your average tractor units, 300, 350, whatever.
For an electric. What's a ballpark figure for, like, a fleet spec Felixstowe container haulier truck, just roughly?
130.
Yeah. So you're looking at nearly three times the price, really.
The operators who are buying electric are those who either want to be the first.
Yeah.
I know there's a big order for Amazon. I've ordered a big load of Mercedes, actually, recently, which that's Amazon, so I think they're almost out of the equation. But it works where you've got these big fleets or trunking, or you're running between RDCs or depots, or that kind of works.
Yeah.
For everybody else, speaking to local companies, whichever the manufacturer, they're all those people who know they're not going to make money running that particular truck, but they want to be the first ones in the area to
have one
to do it.
A bit of ego.
It's a bit of ego, perhaps. Which, we're all in it to make money, and if you know that truck's not going to make you money, kind of struggle with that. But that's nothing more than there's no help from the government. So
what can
you do? You've got to do it. They want us to have electric trucks.
Yeah.
Well. Somebody somewhere's got to do it.
Yeah, sooner or later. It'll be interesting to see what happens, because to have an alternative to diesel, I think, is an advantage. Although, as you said, they're not the ideal setup for everything going.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to like Wilson's with heavy haulage, I don't know how an electric truck would work for somebody like that.
No, I believe Fridrisi.
Yeah.
In Switzerland, they've got an electric Volvo.
Yes, they have.
And it runs about 100 tonne or something like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know how far it goes on electric.
Because I'm presuming, again, I know extremely little about it, but in theory, the more weight it's pulling, the more power it's going to use from its battery, so it's going to have less of a range.
Yeah.
Presumably, same as diesel. Yeah. You'll get better diesel returns when you're empty than loaded.
Battery technology's changed a lot, even in the time I've been sort of talking about it. we know now that the cold weather doesn't ruin the batteries quite as much as it used to.
Yeah.
Just changes in technology, but surely weight, you can't do a lot about weight.
Not really.
The more power you need, the more diesel, electric, hydrogen you're going to use.
Right? Yes. Yeah. Hydrogen being an interesting one for for manual. I think that's a viable alternative as well.
It's viable. I think it's viable because of the range. The range is far better.
Yeah.
That's the problem with everybody. No one wants range anxiety. I can't stand the idea of going on holiday and having to allow at least an hour to charge on the way down to Cornwall. You know, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, or
we all grew up as one-hit wonders.
That's right, Go back to the 7.5-ton days, straight down there. Maybe have a 45-minute break if you can't make it.
No. Adam always reminds me, you say about tacos, and back to the good old days of paper tacos. When I started driving one of the tractor unit, my mate said, the only thing you ever need, a saucepan and a lighter.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, okay. Okay, that's fine. Soon worked out why.
Yeah. So earlier on, you said you've owned, was it 6 trucks, 7 trucks?
The DAF, the Man, the Atigo, the Actros.
And then which leaves 2. And
then, so I bought a Scania 141. So
when was that? You remember?
It must have been. It was when I had the tractor unit, so it would have been somewhere between 04 and 07.
Yeah.
It was probably nearer 06, 07, because through the good chaps at Continental Cargo Carriers, they had agreed that once it would once it was up and running and I'd restored it and put it back on the road, kind of for show use, that they'd allow me to do some lighter loads for a week or two just so I could do some European work in 941. But
it never quite happened.
So it must be right at the end, but that'd be great. But yeah, that'd be good fun. It actually turned out to be a bit of an old dog. These days, it's still on the road by 141, as it were.
Yeah.
But it's up in Scotland with the Gunnings Motors livery on.
Yeah. So where did it come from?
That's a good question.
Yeah, fair enough.
It came from Greece.
Yeah.
It turns out the chassis number was a 110 or a 111.
Right.
But I think it had been probably Greekified and had a sleeper cab put on it and a V8 engine put in it. And to be fair, mechanically, it was in really good nick.
Yeah. Any particular reason for a 141? I know, obviously, they're an iconic truck.
So this is where we'll gently touch on my love of trucks.
Yeah.
So, yes, Mercedes were big time. I worked for Mercedes for a long time and had my own Mercedes trucks. But from 1982, 83, no, actually wasn't. It was Seabridge, which was
83.
Dad's first new truck at ANC was the brand new 92M. And from that day, I spent a lot of my youth in Scanias and Scanias.
Always had a soft spot for
them. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And then I will call him my uncle because it's the closest way of telling everybody. But he worked for Astram for a while. And always, I don't know, just that iconic square cab of 141 just always got me. It's just like a truck. It's just, to be fair, if you're a Volvo fan, not a Volvo fan, if you're a Volvo fan, you know, the 88s and 89s were just a square cab.
Yeah.
It's just... just a truck.
Just had the look, didn't they?
Yeah, so all 141 would do it up. And, that's really good. It's great.
So had it for a while.
My then wife wanted to get a new kitchen and we had a child, so priorities.
Well, so you sold the child.
She
still wasn't enough money.
Never got a kitchen.
Had to get the kitchen.
Yeah, that had to go really in. Actually, to this day, it was still a sad day.
Yeah.
As well as at Wilson's it went.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I must have had it for the first year I was at Wilson's.
Yeah.
And got rid of it. And even that day, Mum and Dad came up and they were like, I think even my mum got a little bit upset that it was off. It was just like, but it was a great truck. It was a really good truck. And got lucky enough in 2009 to take it to Assen to the truck show out there for a year.
Yeah.
That year. And
was that the first year you went?
Yeah, it was the first year I went.
Yeah.
It was bloody great. It was really good. And we're just messing about.
I'm hoping to go this year. That's
You need to go. I can't believe you haven't been.
It's
almost criminal.
It just clashes every other dive holiday that I do. So, but this year, that dive holiday is already full.
Is it?
So I've got the space in the diary. I have spoken to a friend of ours about potentially taking a truck if he can get it booked in, which he seems quite happy to do.
Yeah.
So I might be able to get a truck.
Try and get it booked in.
Yes.
So the application.
You have to apply, don't you?
I've applied already for my little Mercedes to go again this year.
Yeah.
Which actually is truck number 7, so.
Exactly, yeah.
I got bored working at Mercedes.
You got bored.
Everyone in lockdown bought something they didn't need.
I didn't. I was too busy driving because it was lovely being on the road.
That's when we were all heroes.
That's right.
Even truck sales, we were heroes.
I remember that day.
Yeah. Even as a truck salesman, I wasn't even doing anything. We were key workers because we might be selling fire engines.
Exactly. You never know.
So yeah, sitting on the toilet during lockdown.
It's a lovely image. Thank goodness it's a podcast.
Please don't put that picture on. Yeah, sitting there just flicking through mobile.de.
Yep.
As you do. And this lovely little 1989 LN2 sleeper cab Merc 7.5 ton.
Mm-hmm.
Genuine factory tractor unit pinged up. And I was just like, oh.
Kind of rare as the proverbial rock and horse poo, isn't it?
The
really?
Cab I always wanted.
Yep, the cab that I had when I was a driver.
It had the brown interior, the Brazil brown interior, which was always the best interior.
Yeah.
It was left-hand drive. I genuinely liked driving left-hand drive.
Yeah, me too.
My one-for-one was left-hand drive.
Yeah.
It's just, it ticked all the boxes. And I then obviously was able to check the chassis number.
Yeah.
With friends in Germany, and they said that is a genuine factory tractor.
Yeah.
It wasn't a cut down, wasn't anything else. It was
actually
orders.
Made by Mercedes.
Yeah. I was just like, right, okay, I've got to have that.
Yeah. No ifs or buts. I've got to. Because they don't come along every day.
No, they don't. And to be fair, it was 4 years ago now. So 21, I got it, February 21.
Yeah.
I went through it and all the adverts and stuff, and there's a WhatsApp number, so message to the bloke called Toby. Really helpful, really great bloke, helped out getting over. He was quite happy to drive it up to Bremerhaven where it was shipped across.
And yeah,
I was able to cash in various favours that I'd sort of built up over the last 20 years of transport.
Yeah,
I think all in all, it was advertised, the truck was advertised for €6,000.
Yeah, and I got it back to Harwich
for €4,500.
Right,
and including customs, shipping, purchase price,
yeah,
everything else, which, yeah, a real good little deal.
Yeah.
The only thing I was a bit sceptical about, obviously, you buy a truck without ever seeing it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I was going to work it, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
It was advertised at something like 250,000 Ks for a 30-year-old truck.
And is that genuine? Has it been round the clock?
No. Well, again, getting back to when I was at Mercedes, I took it in the workshop, and as soon as we lifted the cab up, the chaps in the workshop were like, oh, that's genuine. That's still plastic on the old cab ram. And I know the cab ram was old. It wasn't a new cab ram.
Yeah.
The engine plate still had the plastic on the top, although caked in mud, didn't find the plastic until we cleaned it all off. Looked like it still had the original clutch in it. It was just like
a time warp machine.
It was like a time warp, and the seat, the interior was as clean as a whistle, proper clean.
So what was it used for? Do you know?
So from day one, so I'm only its third owner.
Okay.
I don't know if I should say who was the first owner.
Well, you don't have to.
No, I'm not going to.
Fair enough.
It had two owners in Germany, and they were both on, like, professional go-kart races.
Okay.
So it had a lovely little step frame trailer behind it, right from when it was new. That first owner then sold it to Toby, who I bought it off exactly with the trailer as well, and he used it. And, I think it just got to that point where they were going further and further afield in modern times with the go-karts. And I know those go-karts, whatever the series is, do go to tracks around Europe, not just within Germany.
Yeah.
So he wanted a slightly bigger...
And probably the struggle of emission zones as well, I suppose.
Yeah, getting it around. But I know he'd been to Portugal in it. I know he'd been to Italy in it.
Yeah.
Which, to be fair, frightens the hell out of me, because obviously being a factory tractor, it had a really low... diff ratio.
Yes, as we've noticed going to the retro show.
So if I'm ever in front, that's
sedate pace.
So it was a case of, that was one thing I had to change, purely say for us going to shows and stuff.
Yeah.
It was flat out at 52-ish, which is rubbish.
Even maritimes are kind of overtaking you.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a case of, and actually, because it came from the factory, it was on a racing team, it came from the factory with seven seats, as it were.
Right.
So it had the two normal seats, had one on the engine tunnel, and then a bench seat in the back.
Yeah.
There's no way you'd get seven men in there, but...
Get the options there.
Yeah, it wasn't going to
be. Seven umpalumpers, maybe.
Yeah, so it arrived in Harwich with the bench seat and everything, which was fine, but obviously wanted to convert it back to bunks.
Yeah.
And then me and my good pal, and your pal, James Cartwright from Wilson's.
Yeah.
Actually in Ipswich, there's a scrapyard over there, SBS.
Good old Mikey.
Managed to, he goes, oh yeah, he said, we've got a brown interior. See the cab in here, and I was like, have you?
Wasn't long to the old one, was it?
I'll tell you whose it was. I said, has it got bunks in it? And he said, yeah. I said, does it look all right? Yeah. I said, right, I'm coming over. Went over literally the following weekend.
Yeah.
And it was Westrope Brothers.
Westrope's,
Getting another truck. I remember passing a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Same as me, because where I used to work, for those listening who don't know, out of Earl's Cone, to head out north, you'd head to Haverhill and then carry on the 1307 to Cambridge, and Westrope's were out on that road. I can't think of the name.
Houston, Bill, between Headingham and...
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was, between Headingham and Hayhill.
And Hayhill somewhere, yeah. I know, I can picture it. Sorry, yeah, the black and yellow machines. Yeah. And there's been quite a few photos lately on the Facebook group of some of them, because I used to do European work, and funny enough, my first ever European trip, I think it was, no, my second one, sorry, tell a lie, I left on a Sunday morning, and I always thought, no, I'm never going to work weekends driving. Yeah, so Sunday morning down to Dover, because I was going to Switzerland, I had to clear customs, and being 18 years old, I had no idea where nothing was.
No.
And it was a Westroad driver pointing out everything down Dover, yeah, go here, blah, 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 do all. And I thought, they're just up the road from me, and he's off. You know.
I think they had a load of Renaults.
Yeah, they had a lot of Renaults.
Was it UniX?
Transmaritime, Swiss work.
Yeah,
UniX. I think there's a lot of people did that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so that was sat in the scrapyard.
Yeah.
Looked inside it, and apart from there's clearly been a very hairy dog in there.
Yeah,
that's not a euphemism for anybody. It's definitely a very hairy dog. The interior was really good, Nick. I took all the bunks out and various other bits and pieces, and
perfect.
Me and James took it out, and then soon realised that old trucks are great because you just needed like a 13mm spanner and a screwdriver, and everything came out.
Yeah,
and
it's all mechanical and simple.
So it was really easy to take the bench seat out and the centre seat.
Yeah,
put the interior in it, and so I've now got this lovely little thing with twin bunks and
One thing I love about that truck, and I'm not just saying this because you're my mate, is I think that's one of the most popular trucks, like at the retro show, because so many people relate to it.
Yeah.
You know, and as great as it is seen, like the F-16s and 141s, blah, 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 not that many people had them, but so many people cut their teeth on a Merc like that, and the amount of people that come over
or wanted one, like me,
or they had a day cab one, had a sleeper, always want the sleeper cab, and it's just like the whole weekend, people constantly coming over. Yeah. Can I sit in it? Yeah, get in there, and just, you know, the handbrake by the door, by your grab handle, you know, the shut off on the floor,
which always catches you out.
It just all comes back just so quickly.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. It's exactly as it's been, which sort of surprised me. We've all been to truck shows and have a good time.
Yeah,
people like to see all the big stuff and all the nice big tractor units, whatever else. And you park that at the retro show the first year we went, the slow year we went.
Yeah.
And the amount of grown men who came over and said, can I sit in your lorry, please? You're like, yeah, okay. That's right. But again, purely from that point of view, is that people either wanted one. Actually, there was one really good, a father and a son came over, and the father said, oh, he goes, that's what we used to double man in when I first started driving. And his son, modern teenager, he said, oh, there's no way you used to fit in that. Okay. He said, it's tiny in there. I said, you can get in.
Yeah.
The pair of you get in, and they both got in.
Yeah.
And actually, the son was like, oh, actually, he said, there's just enough room for me and you in here, isn't there, Dad?
It's,
and you're like,
it's so strange for such a small vehicle. It's a really big cab, isn't it?
It is a big cab. I wondered how much, because obviously cabs changed over the years, as we all know. If you looked at that 141 cab, I reckon that's a very similar size to what.
It's probably not much Merc difference, really, because they were a big cab then.
Yeah, Mercs. they were.
And they were. I think they were probably the best 7.5-tonner going.
Yeah, definitely.
Realistically.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I had, same as you, and then I had the facelifted one with a bigger chunkier grill, which was an 817.
Eco Power.
That was an R edge. It came XTR 2. I think it's R227 or R277 XDA.
Yeah.
I think new, come from Gerard Mann in Birmingham.
Right, okay.
So whoever had it with a tilt body, because that's what Jim Cammack always had, tilt bodies, because they're just so universal. And it was, just wonderful, happy memories of flying about everywhere and just doing my first European trips. And it was just, just a constant grin. Back when we had a proper CB with the old Stinger aerials and things like that.
Oh, I put a CB in my remote now. It's great.
Yeah, it's got to be done.
You say flying about, so we had to change the axle on it. And again, actually out of SBS, bizarrely. I don't know, I'm no good at the ratios and stuff, but there was whatever the standard UK ratio was where everyone was doing 70 miles an hour.
Yeah.
There was that one. And then the truck, which was sat in the scrapyard, was actually two ratios above that.
Right, okay.
So now that's quick.
Yeah.
It's proper quick.
Finally.
It's like flying along. When we went to Assen last year, one of the Dutchmen had a little breakdown and we lost the convoy we were travelling in.
Yeah.
And then we had to catch up. So he's there in his 140 Scania wagon and drag.
Yeah.
75 miles an hour in the outside lane, overtaking everybody. followed by a lovely red 143 18-ton flour lorry.
Yeah.
Wilson's 141, which has never been that fast in its life. Clearly wasn't doing that speed. No.
And then kilometres now, yeah, not miles now.
There's me behind, and I was just like, thank God we changed the diff. We're absolutely flying along.
Yeah.
You're overtaking all these brand new trucks going to the show, and they're all like waving at you and going, yeah, go on, boys.
Like, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
Yeah. So have you got many shows planned this year? For the great 14?
For the great 14. Hashtag great 14. I've applied to go to Assen again.
Yeah.
We'll obviously do the retro again. And then a few other bits and pieces in between. Might try and do a run or two. Nearly went to the Bloxham Steam Fair last year, which would have been quite good, but that didn't quite happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just whatever comes up, really.
Yeah. And speaking of hashtags, you are also the curator of www.truckblog.co.uk.
.co.uk. Yeah.
Yeah.
These days, that went right back to when I stopped driving.
Yeah.
A friend at the time was like, why don't you just start writing a blog? And
yeah.
Whenever that was.
That took off fairly well, didn't it, really?
Yeah, it did. And when I used to write the actual website, it was busy. Lots of people, lots of views.
Yeah. And
sort of 10,000 people a day or whatever it was, which was sort of pre-everybody making their money out of websites and stuff, which is always the time. These days, I just tend to do it on Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah.
But it comes and goes, and various distractions, which you know about the last 2 years. It's been very difficult to keep up with it, but
absolutely,
just the last couple of weeks, been trying to get back into it.
And yeah, they're the best places to have a look now, rather than the actual website.
Yeah, yeah. So,
if you're not on already, was it following? I guess.
Yeah, yeah, following. Yeah, so
page
on Facebook, it's under truckblog.co.uk.
Yeah.
Instagram's the same.
Yeah.
I gave up with Twitter because.
Because
really
you don't like Elon Musk.
No.
It's understandable.
Correct. The www. Is still there, but I haven't posted on it for
temporary
a
years,
long while, which is always a bummer, really, because I used to like writing.
Yeah. Well, you still articles. Can't you? But, yeah, it's just the problem is, like, social media has just taken over from all of it, really, hasn't it? Yeah. Just people, to look for anything, generally people look on Facebook.
Yeah.
And because we were talking about this before we recorded, like, Instagram is more... It's not as engaging, really, is it? Because like with Facebook, you comment with your stories and your photos and stuff. You can't really do that so much with Instagram.
I said to you before, is it whether it is just truckers or truck drivers or the generations or whatever, but my Facebook gets 3-4 times the amount of views that Instagram does.
Yeah.
That thing I put on there this week about the new Ford
F-Max
tractor unit.
Yeah.
I don't know, one day this week and it's already had 100,000 views.
Nuts, isn't it?
I don't know how you make money out of this sort of thing, but
no,
you need to look at it.
Need to try and monetize it somehow.
But no, it's great. And it's, I always wanted to be fair, part of the Truck and Driver gang and do some writing and stuff. And there's various articles, if you want to call them that, I posted on the blog, and some of the reviews and comments and engagement you got out of it was great.
Yeah.
It was little stories or ditties or...
Yeah.
One of the best things I wrote was the Lost Art of Map Reading.
Yes.
So if you can get that republished, that'd be great. But that was a real good little write-up, and the amount of people who came on and said... it was basically about sat-navs versus paper maps.
Paper maps, yeah.
And it was just such a good... It was so well-received, it was great. And that was the heyday of writing decent blogs. But
yeah. That could come back.
It could come back.
Couldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So... What does the future hold then? Just more truck sales? Is there another classic truck that you'd like to own if you could?
There is. And now I've swapped to the wonderful Scania. I think the Great 14's days may be numbered.
Yeah.
No plans to get rid of it yet, but it will be for sale at some point, I think.
I'll buy it.
I think.
I'll buy it.
Yeah, that'll do. Yeah. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So I think that might go, but I have got my eyes on, with my love of ACH, Aston Clinton haulage, there is an E-Reg 143, which, again, recently, there's a Facebook thing going on that you could have a Scania 142 or a 143 when they brought the 143s out on an E-Reg. So it's
an early 143.
Yeah, but there's an E-Reg 143 out there, which is still on the show circuit, that was new to ACH.
Right.
I've spoken to the bloke who owns it at the retro last year.
Yeah.
He says I'll have first refusal on it in about 2 years' time.
Right.
But that just about suit, to be fair, life will be back on track and
work-wise
and whatever else. Because one of the things with the Mercedes, although it was a show truck, I did used to go around and see customers in it.
Yeah, brilliant.
But I can't really do that now. I work
not now. So, yeah, very true.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. I'll track Eastman to come up with that. But
so have it painted in Assentown and Haulage colours.
Yeah, absolutely. If I could, it'd be great. Yeah. If I could get my hands on that truck, that would be. Yeah. I don't think I'd need another truck.
No,
that would be it, and it'd be great for shows. It'd be great for everything else. And
yeah,
it'd be lovely to have something on the show scene. Oh, absolutely. With Aston Clinton.
Yeah,
colours and county cream.
Yes.
We've
all got our. Are one that we would have, and if you can fulfil it, why not?
I'll just put a little plug in. If you've got any ACH links, or if you've got ACH stories, or you drove, or were a customer, please let me know.
Isn't there an ACH page on Facebook?
ACH page on Facebook, which is great. It's a real good thing. It's full of drivers, old ACH drivers, old ACH customers. Turns out a lot of people did like the trucks as well. They're a good-looking fleet, good-looking company, which actually then leads. We had that model done a couple of years ago, the F12.
Yes. Or Steve at Anglo-Dutch.
Yes.
Yep. Top man Steve.
Top man Steve. Yep. Top scoop Steve. Might not like me saying it, but there is first stages of drawings for the next ACH model. Just underway.
Yeah.
Haven't even seen anything yet, but I know Steve's been working on it. So
fantastic.
That might come out later this year.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do like a good model.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. Too many.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Right, well, we're an hour in now, so we better wrap that up.
We are.
Yeah, and, well, it's been a pleasure, Ben.
No, that's
been
very much. Yeah. Really good, mate.
Most enjoyable. Yeah. So, we'll hopefully catch up again soon.
Yeah, we will do. Yeah, thanks very much.
Oh, mate, no worries.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. Ta-da.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.